Tonight, we're going to have our second session on the Leva'im, and so that people understand, I have a serious case of bronchitis and a tremendous head cold, and so I'm going to sound congested all through this thing. You'll probably hear me coughing and all of this. But when logic says I should have stayed home and not pursued this, to me, the study was so exciting and opening up so many different things that it not only was where that we learned of the Leva'im, the Levites, but also it is a bridge into studying the priesthood. There's no way to be able to study the priesthood unless you first establish the foundation of the Levitical tribe. And so, at any rate, I just felt that I really needed to pursue this while it was very hot on my mind, fresh in my studies, and so here we are tonight. I'm going to pick up exactly where we left off in our last session, and my plan for the night is to finish out talking about the biblical period, talking about the period of the Tanakh, the time of the monarchy, the kings, and the time of Ezra, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel returning, and it will lead us up to the Second Temple period, or it will actually be into the Second Temple period. Then I want to take it in the Agadah, how that it was presented to us in the rabbinical writings. And then I want to go back and discuss a little bit about the rebellion of Korah. Following that, as I mentioned, the study of the Leva'im is actually a bridge to studying the priesthood. And so we're going to spend the last portion of tonight talking about the Mishmarot and the Mavadot. And you might not be familiar with those terms, but that is the terms of the courses, the divisions of the Levites and the priest. And that will bring us into the realm of the priesthood. Where we had left off in our last session was talking about the Levitical cities. There were 48 different towns, Levitical cities that were set up, and we see them listed for us in the book of Yehoshua, chapter 21. Now, we went over those last week, so it's not my plan to read those again, but we saw how that they were divided. Now, the houses in the Levitical towns were regarded as a substitute for territory. So they had houses in the towns, but they owned no territory. Their houses, the laws of the Jubilee, applied to them as to the land. People did have, and we mentioned this last week, that the Levites did have properties around there, but they could not raise crops on them. They were specifically for grazing. They were herders, and a lot of their job was to raise the different animals to be the shepherds for the flocks, and to watch over the goat herds, to raise the cattle that would be used in the temple services, which is very interesting whenever you start to consider the birth of Yeshua. There were shepherds abiding in the field at Bethlehem. And Bethlehem, of course, is one of the Levitical cities, and we know that at Bethlehem that they specifically, the Levites, were employed there to raise the animals for the temple sacrifices. And so, in all probability, even though we cannot say this with absolute clarity, but in all probability, the shepherds that were in the field the night that Yeshua was born were probably from the tribe of Levi, and probably in the employ of the temple, raising sheep for the temple sacrifices.
Joe,
yes.
I've got a question. I've heard in the past that the shepherds would have been on the lowest end of the Jewish people as far as keeping kosher laws or laws in general. Now, am I misled on that?
Well, when you consider the whole country of Israel, the sheep herding was one of the major industries of the ancient time. And it is not something that you should view that only Leva'im were shepherds. I mean, that all your different tribes were shepherds. Now, the way I would approach that is that that might be true in the overall scheme of things, that the shepherds were at the lowest state. But in the case of the shepherds that were from the tribe of Levi, I believe that unless they were a rogue Levite, one that had departed from God, he would be even more diligent than the other members of the community because of his obligation to keep himself Levitically pure, to keep the standards as prescribed for the various animals that he's raising that are set. I mean, he has a tradition, a family tradition that's biblically based to be one of the astute ones towards the commandments of God.
So were the shepherds, would that have been one of the 24 courses? Or would these have been, that's their private job and they spent their 2 weeks at the temple doing duties as well?
I would think that the latter is the case, that many of them will be employed as shepherds. Others are going to be employed in collecting the foods and everything that are going to be distributed, you know, at the storehouses. Others would be employed as teachers among the people, but all of them would have their shifts to perform at the temple. Okay, so does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now, all the way to the time of Yehezkel, we had that the principle remained in force, of the people of the Levitical families being scattered throughout the land. However, Yehezkel relates to us that in the time to come, in other words, when Messiah will come, that they'll no longer be scattered throughout the country, but they will be gathered into Jerusalem. And let's go to Yehezkel chapter 45. And we'll read verses 4 and 5. It shall be a holy portion of the land belonging to the Kohanim, the ministers of the sanctuary, who come near to minister to the Lord. It shall be a place for the houses and a holy place for the sanctuary. An area 25,000 cubits long, 10,000 wide, shall belong to the Levi'im, the ministers of the temple. They shall have 20 chambers as a possession. So the Levi'im are going to have a 20,000 cubit long, 10,000 wide, cubit wide area that is delegated directly to them. There's another passage on this. Go to chapter 48 of Yehezkel again, and verse 11 through 15. It shall be for the Kohanim of the sons of Zadok, who are sanctified, who have kept my charge, who did not go astray when the children of Israel went astray, as the Levi'im went astray. And this district of land that is set apart shall be to them a thing most holy by the borders of the Levi'im. Opposite the border of the Kohanim, the Levi'im shall have an area 25,000 cubits in length and 10,000 in width. Its entire length shall be 25,000, and its width 10,000. And they shall not sell or exchange any of it. They may not alienate this best part of the land, for it is holy to the Lord. Now, when it says it's holy to the Lord, it means that it has a term applied to it that it's Kodesh, meaning that it means that it cannot be used for any other purpose. That it is set apart to God to be used by the Levi'im and only for specific purposes. The 5,000 cubits in width that remain along the edge of the 25,000 shall be for general use by the city, for dwellings and common land, and the city shall be in the center. So we have in the future what the Levi'im will have a territory, and it will be there in the vicinity of Jerusalem. Please go to the book of Ezra.
That city in the center, though, still belongs to the Kohanim.
Right.
So it's a priestly city.
Okay. Right, it's a priestly city, exactly. From the time of the return to Zion, now when we talk about the return to Zion, one of the things that you should think of is the prophets of return.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who are the prophets of return, the men of return? That would be Ezra, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, Yeshua the son of Jehozadak. We have the prophets Haggai, Malachi, Zechariah. There are numbers of them that are part of the return. So that is the beginning of the Second Temple period. So from the time of the return to Zion, the boundaries between the Kohanim, the priest, and the Levi'im were firmly established. Now, there is some debate about this before. Some of the scholars say that it was not firmly established until they returned from Babylon. I disagree with this. Others disagree with this. I believe that it was firmly, that there was a boundary between them from the time of Moshe, from the very time that we have the establishment of the priesthood, and that's basically from the time of the golden calf, Exodus chapter 32. But there was a boundary between the two, I believe, from that time. Others say from the time of the beginning of the Second Temple. At any rate, we know that during the entire Second Temple period, there was a definite boundary between the Kohanim and the Levi'im. Now, what do I mean by boundary? I'm not talking about territory. I'm talking about in what you do, the duties that you have, the responsibilities, the obligations, the opportunities, all of these various things. They have two different types of jobs. Daryl, you look like a question, okay? Now, the Levi'im acquired an honored status. And by the way, I was reading an article today. I'm not going to read this article to you. I think I brought it with me. Yeah, here it is. I was reading an article today on the Levi'im out of the Jewish Encyclopedia. And it made mention of this, about that in the Second Temple period that the Levi'im definitely had an honored status, and they gave several quotes as to prove this. And what was interesting about the quotes that they gave, every one of them was from the New Testament. That in other words, in the New Testament, we see, and in particular, out of the Gospels, we see that the Levi'im were held a very honored position in Jewish society at large. Let me just glance over it, and I might be able to see the passages that they had. It says, at the beginning of the Common Era, the Levites were an important class of religious officials, and it says, compare Luke 10:32 and John 1:19. Okay, so I thought it was interesting that they used that as an establishment for this. 1:19. Okay, now we have in Ezra chapter 2, I'm the only one that needs to turn there. We're going to go to the 40th verse. Ezra chapter 2 and verse 40. Where we see the Levi'im, the sons of Yeshua and Kadmiel, of the sons of Hodaviah, 74, the singers, the sons of Asaph, 128, the sons of the gatekeepers, the sons of Shalom, the son of Ater, the sons of Talmon, the sons of Akub, the sons of Hattiah, and the sons of Shobai, 139 in all. Here, and this is rather remarkable, in this listing of the Levi'im that returned with Ezra and Yeshua the son of Jehozadak. It is a very small number in comparison with that of the priest. Only a small portion of them returned back. One of the interesting things that will come out here as we get into studying the courses and the divisions is how they handled this problem. However, because of their small number, it added to their importance in the eyes of the people. Now, let me explain something. And this will become very important as we go along. The Levites have certain jobs. The Kohanim have certain jobs. The Levites are not allowed to do the job of the Kohanim except in special instances. Likewise, the Kohanim are not allowed to do the job of the Levites. Now, the thing that I think about naturally is here in, you know, this area, one of the big things is labor unions. And in a labor union, or if you're in a job where they have the unions working, you don't dare do somebody else's job. That's the best way to get in trouble. And if you're a foreman and you put somebody doing a job that's not his job, and it's guaranteed by the contract that that a carpenter is going to do carpenter work and a pipe fitter does pipe fitter work, and if you cross that line, you are in a tremendous amount of trouble. And so that's the easiest way to think of it in my mind. Here, as it talks about these different jobs, there are specific duties that each has, and you cannot cross the line. Now, there is an instance where we have in the Tanakh. Let me find this for us. 1 Chronicles and chapter 30. Excuse me, 2 Chronicles in chapter 30. Okay, and this is where that Hizkiyahu, the situation is, the father of Hizkiyahu was King Ahaz. And he had, of course, departed from God. He had turned from God totally. And so when Hizkiyahu becomes king, he becomes king in the first month, on the first day of Nisan. And he immediately calls together the Kohanim and the Levites. And they make a covenant before the Lord to return back to God and to sanctify the congregation and to sanctify the temple, to rededicate the temple back to God. So they spend the first 16 days, cleaning the temple. On the 17th day of Nisan, the temple is cleansed. Hizkiyahu rises early in the morning, and he goes up and he has this great celebration before God. Now, that's very interesting because it's on the 17th day of Nisan that later on, Yeshua would also rise from the dead. And it's intentional. I mean, there's a picture that's being shown here. Yes?
That was the one that didn't believe in God?
No. This is Hizkiyahu, Hezekiah, his son. Okay? In other words, his father didn't believe in God. Okay? Now, but there's a problem. They didn't have the temple cleansed on the 14th of Nisan. It's the 17th of Nisan when they're able to go in and start to celebrate. And so the 14th of Nisan is Pesach. Pesach's already passed, already into Hakamatzah. And so they delay the Pesach for 1 month till the kill the Pesach on the 14th of Iyar, Ziv, and then they will, starting on the 15th of Iyar, begin to hold the festival of HaKamatzah. Now this gives them time. Of course, this was biblically allowed back in the Torah this gives them time to send runners throughout all of the southern kingdom and even over into the northern kingdom and invite everybody in both of the kingdoms. Remember, the northern kingdom has fallen by this time, but there's still a lot of people up there. Invite everybody to come down to Jerusalem to keep the festival of Pesach in the second month. And they have an overwhelming response. Everybody is on fire for doing this. Everybody is excited. And everybody floods down there. And so we're going to pick it up here. Let's just read a few verses at the first, and we'll drop down. And Hizkiyahu sent to all Israel and Yehuda, and also wrote letters to Ephraim and Manasseh, that they should come to the house of the Lord at Jerusalem to keep the Pesach to the Lord God of Israel. For the king and his leaders and all the congregation in Jerusalem had agreed to keep the Pesach in the second month. For they could not keep it at that time because a sufficient number of Kohanim had not sanctified themselves, nor had the people gathered together at Jerusalem. And the matter pleased the king and all the congregation, so they resolved to make a proclamation throughout all Israel from Beersheba to Dan. And that's going from the southern deserts all the way to right at the border of Lebanon. And so let's drop down. It tells us that the runners go all through the country. And let's go to verse 10. So the runners passed from city to city through the country of Ephraim and Manasseh as far as Zebulun. But they laughed them to scorn and mocked them. Nevertheless, some from Asher, Manasseh, and Zebulun humbled themselves and came to Jerusalem. Also the hand of God was on Yehuda to give them singleness of heart to do the commandment of the king and the leaders at the word of the Lord. Now many people, a very great congregation, assembled at Jerusalem to keep the festival of unleavened bread in the second month. They arose and took away the altars that were in Jerusalem. That would be the pagan altars. They took away all the incense altars and cast them into the brook Kidron. Then they slaughtered the Pesach lambs on the 14th day of the second month. The Kohanim and the Levim were ashamed and sanctified themselves and brought the burnt offerings to the house of the Lord. They stood in their place according to their custom, according to the Torah of Moshe, the man of God. The Kohanim sprinkled the blood, which they received from the hand of the Levim. Okay, so note that. Now, one of the jobs of the Levim at times will to be to offer public sacrifices. However, the Kohanim will be the only ones that are specified to handle the blood. For there were many in the congregation who had not sanctified themselves. Therefore, the Levim had charge of the slaughter of the Pesach lambs. Now that is unusual. They at times can kill the Pesach lambs, but it's usually in the charge of the Kohanim. In other words, the Kohanim will oversee it, even though Levim could assist them. Here, the Levim actually took charge of the slaughtering of the animals. For everyone who was not clean, to sanctify them to the Lord. For a multitude of the people, many from Ephraim, Manasseh, Issachar, and Zebulun, had not cleansed themselves, yet they ate the Pesach contrary to what was written. But Hezekiah prayed for them, saying, "May the Lord God provide atonement for everyone who prepares his heart to seek God, the Lord God of his fathers, though he is not cleansed according to the purification of the sanctuary." And the Lord listened to Hezekiah and healed the people. Okay, now, I want to go to verse 22. And Hezekiah gave encouragement to all the Levim who taught the good knowledge of the Lord, and they ate throughout the feast 7 days, offering peace offerings and making confession to the Lord God of their fathers. Then the whole assembly agreed to keep the festival another 7 days, and they kept it another 7 days with gladness. And then it goes on into the public sacrifices. Now, I want you to go to chapter 34 of 2 Chronicles. Excuse me, chapter 35. In chapter 34, they were the reign of King Yoshiyahu, Josiah, and he has set about to cleanse the temple. He too was preceded by two evil kings. He is the great-grandson of Hezekiah. Hezekiah's son Manasseh departed from the Lord. Then Manasseh's son Amon departed from the Lord. And then Amon's son Yoshiyahu, Josiah, came back to God. And after he came back, they discovered the Torah, which was believed to be the book of Deuteronomy. And they have a great total national return to God at this time. So in chapter 35, we see Yoshiyahu kept the Passover to the Lord in Jerusalem, and they slaughtered the Pesach lambs on the 14th day of the first month. And he set the Kohanim in their duties, encouraged them for the service of the house of the Lord. Then he said to the Levim, who taught all of Israel, who were holy to the Lord. And again, we see this duty of the Levim to teach. Put the holy ark in the house which Shlomo the son of David, king of Israel, built. It shall no longer be a burden on your shoulders. Now serve the Lord your God and his people Israel. Prepare yourselves according to your father's houses, according to your divisions, following the written instruction of David, king of Israel, and the written instruction of Shlomo his son. And stand in the holy place according to the divisions of the fathers' houses of your brethren, the lay people, and according to the division of the father's house of the Levi. So slaughter the Pesach offering, sanctify yourselves, prepare them for your brethren, that they may do according to the word of the Lord by the hand of Moshe. Then Yoshiahu gave the lay people lambs and young goats from the flock, all for Pesach offerings, for all who were present, to the number of 30,000, as well as 3,000 cattle. These were from the king's possessions, and his leaders gave willingly to the people, to the Kohanim, to the Levi'im, Hilkiah, Zechariah, and Yahiel, rulers of the house of God, gave to the Kohanim for the Pesach offerings 2,600 from the flock and 300 cattle. Also Konaniah, his brothers, Shemaiah and Nathaniel, and Hashabiah and Yahiel and Yozabad, chief of the Levi'im, gave to the Levi'im for Pesach offerings 5,000 from the flock and 500 cattle. So the service was prepared, and the Kohanim stood in their place, and the Levi'im in their divisions, according to the king's command. Every time that you see this division, okay, I want you, let me go over this. Verse 10, so the service was prepared, and the Kohanim stood in their places. Okay, make a particular note of that. This is going to deal with a major statement that will be made. And the Levi'im in their divisions. Okay, and again, the Levi'im in their divisions according to the king's command. And they slaughtered the Pesach offerings, and the Kohanim sprinkled the blood with their hands while the Levi'im skinned the animals. Then they removed the burnt offerings that they might give them to the divisions of the father's houses of the lay people. Okay, in these verses, write down 2 Chronicles chapter 35, verses 10 through 12. And we'll come back to that later. And so they did with the cattle. They roasted the Pesach offering with fire according to the ordinance. But the other holy offerings they boiled in pots and cauldrons and in pans and divided them quickly among all the lay people. Then afterward they prepared portions for themselves and for the Kohanim, because the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, were busy in offering burnt offerings and fat until night. Therefore the Levi'im prepared portions for themselves and for the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron. And the singers, the sons of Asaph, were in their places according to the command of David, Asaph, Heman, and Yeduthun, the king's seers. Also the gatekeepers were at each gate. They did not have to leave their possession, because the brethren, the Levi'im, prepared portions for them. And that's what I wanted you to see, is that at times the Levi'im, because of circumstances, holy circumstances, were allowed to exceed their normal responsibilities, but they could not do it under their own, I just want to do it. Okay? So all the service of the Lord was prepared the same day to keep the Pesach and offer burnt offerings on the altar of the Lord according to the command of King Yoshiaku. And the children of Israel who were present kept the Pesach at that time and the festival of unleavened bread for 7 days. There had been no Pesach kept in Israel like that since the days of Shmuel the prophet, and none of the kings of Israel had kept such a Pesach as Yoshiachu kept with the Kohanim and the Levi'im, all Yehuda and Israel who were present, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Okay, I want to go back over here to chapter 29. We're going to see chapter 29, 2 Chronicles. It's back to the time of Hizkiyahu. It's before the Pesach. So I wanted to do the two Passovers together, because we can relate to Pesach as a unit. But now we're going to go back to Hizkiyahu. We're in the month of Nisan, and they have just consecrated the temple. And so you remember that I told you on the 17th day, Hizkiyahu rose early, went up to the temple, and they had this great festival before the Lord. Now look at this one. I love this one. These, the chapters we're looking at, chapters 29 and chapters 30 and chapter 35, along with the chapters of when Solomon dedicated the temple, to me are the greatest praise chapters in the Bible. This is where that we get a glimpse of the ideal or the prototype worship. So let's look at this, starting at verse 20. That King Hezekiah rose early, gathered the rulers of the city, and went up to the house of the Lord. And they brought seven bulls, seven rams, seven lambs, and seven male goats for a sin offering for the kingdom, for the sanctuary, and for Yehuda. When it says for the sanctuary, it means the temple. Then he commanded the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, to offer them on the altar of the Lord. So they killed the bulls, and the Kohanim received the blood and sprinkled it on the altar. Likewise, they killed the rams and sprinkled the blood on the altar. They also killed the lambs and sprinkled the blood on the altar. Then they brought out the male goats for the sin offering before the king and the congregation, and they laid their hands on them. And the Kohanim killed them. They presented their blood on the altar as a sin offering to make an atonement for all of Israel. For the king commanded that the burnt offering and the sin offering be made for all of Israel. Then he stationed the Levi'im in the house of the Lord with cymbals, with stringed instruments, and with harps, according to the commandment of David, of God the king's seer, and of Natan the prophet. For thus was the commandment of the Lord by his prophets. You might want to write this down. The musicians in the temple were the Levi'im. That was not a job for the Kohanim. It was specifically a job for the Levi'im. The Levi'im stood with the instruments of David, and the Kohanim with the trumpets. Then Hezekiah commanded them to offer the burnt offering on the altar, and when the burnt offering began, the song of the Lord also began, with the trumpets and with the instruments of David, king of Israel. So all the congregation worshipped, the singers sang, and the trumpeters sounded. All this continued until the burnt offering was finished. And when they had finished offering, the king and all who were present with him bowed and worshipped. Moreover, King Hezekiah and the leaders commanded the Levi'im to sing praise to the Lord with the words of David and of Asaph the seer. Now, Asaph is also a Levite. Asaph is going to be one of the heads of the Levitical families, and he is a collector of the Psalms. So they sang praises with gladness, and they bowed their heads and worshipped. Then Hezekiah answered and said, "Now that you have consecrated yourselves to the Lord, come near and bring sacrifices and thank offerings into the house of the Lord." So the congregation brought in sacrifices and thank offerings, and as many as were of a willing heart brought burnt offerings. And the number of the burnt offerings which the congregation brought was 70 bulls, 100 rams, and 200 lambs. All these were for a burnt offering to the Lord. The consecrated things were 600 bulls, 3,000 sheep, but the Kohanim were too few, so that they could not skin all the burnt offerings. Therefore the brethren, the Levi'im, helped them until the work was ended and until the other Kohanim had sanctified themselves. So the suddenness of Hezekiah becoming the king and the problem of consecrating themselves to the Lord. Now understand that they would really have a problem with this because they had to clean out the filth, and they had all types of abominable things that were in the temple that had been left there by King Ahaz. Many of them in the course of cleansing would become Levitically unclean. And so they have this problem. So here's the solution. But the Kohanim were too few so that they could not skin all the burnt offerings. Therefore their brother the Levi'im helped them until the work was ended and until the other Kohanim had sanctified themselves. For the Levi'im excuse me, were more diligent in sanctifying themselves than the Kohanim. Also, the burnt offerings were in abundance with the fat of the peace offerings and with the drink offerings for every burnt offering. So the service of the house of the Lord was set in order. Then Hezekiah and all the people rejoiced that God had prepared the people since the events took place so suddenly. So we have seen three different instances where the Levi'im were upgraded in their responsibilities. Now, in no way should we have the conception that a Kohen, a priest, is higher than a Levite. Excuse me. He is not higher. Their functions are different. Each is equal in his standing before God. Each is important in his standing before God. Each function is important. Okay, we will return to that as we talk about the rebellion of Korah. But let me move on. And We're going to move into talking about in the Agadah. So we're going to be dealing with how that they were treated in the rabbinical writings. Now, one of the things to bear in mind that when you talk about the rabbinical writings is that these were composed at the beginning by the Pharisees. And the Pharisees were in direct competition with the Sadducees. The Sadducees were primarily made up of Kohanim and Levi'im. Okay, so here you have two groups that basically hate each other, that compete with each other. So you have to, in looking at the rabbinical writings concerning the Levi'im, there is a certain bias towards them in rabbinical writings. So you have to just remember that as you deal with it. Let me read you this statement, though. Rabbinical Agadah greatly expanded the biblical material, sometimes to Levi's detriment. But more frequently, it reversed the picture. Now, it will reverse the picture in relationship to the Kohanim. In other words, the Kohanim were seen as the real enemies, the real corrupt ones. Now, let me give you an interesting point on the Levi'im. One of the jobs of the Levi'im is, you know that in the Torah, it requires that the people pay a temple tax. This is called the Hatzi Shekel, the half shekel. And by the way, I have a picture on my desk of the new Hatzi Shekel, they have minted for the coming temple. I'll bring that over after the break and show y'all. But at any rate, this is to be collected every year. It was collected right before the festival of Pesach. It is the responsibility of the Levi'im to collect the half shekel. That is one of their jobs. They are the tax collectors. And when you read about them in the scriptures, when you read about the publicans, a publican is a tax collector. That's what a publican is. Now, you might remember that Matityahu, the writer of the Gospel of Matthew, he is called Levi in one of the other Gospels. He is a Levite, and he's a tax collector. More than likely, Zacchaeus was a Levite. And specifically, we know that because he was one of the tax collectors. Okay. excuse me. In the Agadah, one of the interesting things that it has, and I just want to go through some of these. We had talked about the term Levi, what it means in an etymological sense. It means to join together. Now, if you'll remember that we had brought out that Roland DeVoe felt that the word also related to one of the duties and responsibilities of the Levi'im to dance, and that the word Levi can also mean to dance, to jump about, to twist. You might know the word Leviathan, which means the twisted or coiled servant. But in the Talmud, they had other meanings that they ascribed to the word Levi or to the name Levi. And one of them was that the name Levi was prophetic, that his tribe would lead Levi, L-A-V-E-H, which means to escort or accompany the Israelites to their Father in heaven. If you want the source for that, that's in Genesis Rabbah 71, verse 4. Here's one that I really liked. When Phinehas, now you remember who Phinehas was. Phinehas is the son of Eleazar, who is the son of Aaron. Okay, so Aaron was the first high priest. Eleazar was the second. Phinehas was his son. You remember when the people sinned with the Midianite women. And so one of the men, Dibri, had gone to off to be with one of the Mennonite women, and Phinehas picks up a spear and he kills both of them, and he stops a plague upon Israel. When Phinehas argued before the Almighty that the sin of Zimri did not warrant I don't know how to pronounce this word, C-O-N-D-I-G-N. Anybody know how to pronounce that? Cunding. Okay, the cunding punishment of the whole nation, Numbers 25, verse 9, the angel sought to repel him, but God said to him, and I love this, let him be. You might remember me commenting about this last week. Let him be. He is a zealot and the descendant of a zealot. Levi, in other words, Levi, the head of the tribe, who was zealous to defend his sister's honor. Remember when we talked about that? How that Levi was a zealot, that he rose up and slew all the men of Shechem, who was zealous to defend his sister's honor, Genesis 34:25 and following. A wrath appeaser and a descendant of a wrath appeaser. The tribe of Levi was the only one that practiced circumcision in Egypt. Now that's according to rabbinical tradition. We don't know that for certain. And did not lapse into idolatry. Okay, now, why is that important in the Agadah? Because it gives us a view of how the tribe of Levi was generally viewed by the people of the Second Temple period. In other words, they said, of all of our tribes, the tribe of Levi, at the beginning, when the people had departed from God, they were the ones that did not go into idolatry, and they were the ones that continued to practice circumcision. And so I would say that that would be an important factor in the people's mind. Another rabbinical tradition says that in Egypt, they were the only tribe that was not enslaved, and that they were not put to degrading work. And the reason being the previous, that they did not go into idolatry. Now again, I want to mention that this is not something that we have as a biblical fact, but we see a pattern that was developing in the minds of the people of the first century. One more. Whereas the Israelites were liberated from Egypt for their prospective but not present merit in making the tabernacle, the tribe of Levi was liberated for its own immediate merit. In other words, that the tribe of Levi, not because of anything that they would do later, but because they had not gone into idolatry, it says, for the whole tribe was righteous in Egypt. Now, this is a biblical fact. The tribe of Levi did not participate in the sin of the golden calf once Moses showed up. Okay? Obviously, according to the Talmud, they didn't participate at all, but that can't be right. Aaron is the one, he's a Levite. I mean, he's a Kohen, but he's a Levite. He's the one that fashions it, okay? He's the guy that does it. You know that there were others were involved. But the redeeming thing is that once Moshe shows up, they don't hesitate to stand with Moshe and stand against the idolatry. To a man, the entire tribe comes over to Moshe. And I want to go back and read that. By the way, let's go to Shemot chapter 32. And let's go, we'll get verse 25, I believe is where we'll start. Now when Moshe saw that the people were unrestrained, for Aaron had not restrained them to their shame among their enemies, then Moshe stood in the entrance of the camp and said, whoever is on the Lord's side, let him come to me. And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together to him. And he said to them, thus says the Lord God of Israel, let every man put his sword on his side and go in and out from entrance to entrance throughout the camp, and let every man kill his brother, every man his companion, and every man his neighbor. So the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moshe, and about 3,000 men of the people fell that day. Then Moshe said, consecrate yourselves today to the Lord, that he may bestow on you a blessing this day. For every man is opposed to his son and his brother. And it came to pass on the next day that Moshe said to the people, you have sinned a great sin. And then he will say that he would go up to make atonement. Now, it's because of their stand at the golden calf that the tribe of Levi is set apart. That is why that they are set apart to become the tribe that will minister before the Lord.